SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back in, everybody. What do you say? It's a little early line with you right here on a Monday morning. I'm Kevin Walsh, from joined by Donnie Wrightside. Sports Grid with you following game number two of the NBA Finals. But first, most important, Donnie, how you feeling?
I'm feeling good here on a Monday, ready to go, Kevin. And I asked you a question on Friday's show. Can we just please get a Miami Heat win on Sunday night to extend this series and make it look like it's going at least six or seven games? Mission accomplished.
Mission certainly accomplished. The Heat, as an 8.5-point underdog, upset the Denver Nuggets 111-108. They do it with a fantastic fourth quarter where they score 36 points and win that quarter by 11 over Denver. 20-plus points for Bam Adebayo, Jimmy Butler, and Gabe Vincent, the team's leading scorer, with 23. And their shooters woke back up. Max Strus, big time first quarter. Duncan Robinson, 10 points, all of those coming in the fourth quarter.
You know what a recipe for success is, Kevin? When you go on the road in an NBA Finals game, two games, shoot the lights out from three-point range, with the Miami Heat absolutely did that. But I got to tell you, very impressed with the Heat coming out strong early, getting blasted off the court, and closing strong. I mean, this team just doesn't give up. Heat culture, baby, as we like to say.
I think there's a lot more than culture. This team's really good, and they're in the finals, and people still think they stink and don't belong here, and it's kind of wild, and it's a bit embarrassing, but yet here we are. That's the tone around the Miami Heat for people, despite the fact they have home court advantage in the NBA Finals, minus 260 on the Denver Nuggets, by the way, to win this series. It's 1-1. It's going back to Miami. We'll break it all down, no doubt about it. We've also got the Stanley Cup Final going on. 5-2. Vegas explodes late in that game against the Florida Panthers to take a nice little 1-0 lead and protect home ice so far.
Monster third period. That's what you have to do. It's always big. You get that momentum straight out of game one. We'll see how the Florida Panthers respond in game number two with a couple same game parlays later.
Which is what the people are absolutely ecstatic to see. It's, as you mentioned, tonight is game two, so an opportunity there for the Panthers to pull one back against Vegas. How about some Major League Baseball headline, too? The Texas Rangers in the news. Bruce Bochy with the 10th most wins all time in Major League Baseball. Picked that up, I believe, over the weekend. I don't know if it was Saturday or Sunday, but what I do know is also hit streak watch is now fully in effect with Marcus Semien, as he is out there, Donnie, on a 23-game hit streak. Only once during the month of May did he have a game where he did not get a base hit.
Yeah, Semien and Seager at the top of that lineup. A lot of money spent over the past couple years on the Texas Rangers franchise to try to get back over the hump, and it looks like they're doing that. And Bochy's a great manager here, so watch out for the Texas Rangers the rest of the way. It's a good ball club.
No doubt about it. How about some New York baseball updates here? Francisco Lindor struggling at the dish. The Mets struggling as a whole. They are once again finding themselves sat at bang 500 as they were swept by the Toronto Blue Jays. Not good enough here when you consider that was a home series for the Metropolitans.
And you look at that lineup, Kevin, it just woefully underperforming in a lot of spots outside of Pete Alonso's power and RBI and home runs. There's not a lot to love in that lineup here. Maybe they wake up. There's still a long way to go, but you're talking about a lineup that has a lot of money invested, not doing any damage.
Certainly not. We bring our Randy Waddington into the fold here on a Monday morning. Kevin Walsh and Donnie Wrightside. It's the early line on SiriusXM, channel 159. Big series over the weekend between the Yanks and the Dodgers. And the Yanks make the most of it. They grab two out of three here. Absolutely blasted in the opening game of the series on Friday. Severino taken to task by Mookie Betts and co. But the Yanks pull two back, Donnie, including the finale here 4-1.
Yeah, ball was flying out there at Chavez Ravine over the weekend, and you're right. It looked like it might be setting up for a disastrous series for the Yankees as they were getting dropped in game one, but a nice comeback in game number two and also game number three. The Yankees getting healthy, and how about that? Coming right back into the lineup with home runs with Stanton and Donaldson game. That was pretty fantastic stuff to watch there. That's good news for the Yanks.
No doubt about it. Right now, there are only three teams in Major League Baseball with more wins than the New York Yankees. It's been an interesting season already in the Bronx. NFL news here. Ed Oliver gets paid by the Buffalo Bills a four-year, $68 million deal to keep Ed Oliver in Buffalo.
Yeah, D-tackle seemed like the new quarterback position here payment-wise. And also, Ed Oliver, now the only defensive tackle, I believe, post this season that will be under contract long-term for the Buffalo Bills. They wanted to get something done, and they came to an agreement.
The other big NFL news right now that we will get into in our second hour this morning is all the conversation around Dalvin Cook. Will he be cut? Will he be traded? And is he 1,000% going to land in the AFC East? That last bit seems like a yes for many people. We also got some big news in the world of soccer. Zlatan Ibrahimovic retiring at the age of 41 as he finishes things out with AC Milan.
The thing I always liked about Zlatan here is that he always spoke of himself in the third party, which I thought was fantastic. Mm-hmm. That's a superstar move right off the bat, and the guy certainly was a soccer superstar.
Absolutely. So, by the way, at the Memorial won by Victor Hovland in a playoff there, Donnie. If a cut boost loses, but one of the guys in the boost wins the tournament, shouldn't they pay back the boost? Is that too much to ask?
Yeah, exactly. It should actually be doubled at that point here. It's pretty hard to do. So, yes, I do agree with that. Give the people what they want.
Yeah. Shout out Corey Connors. Tough scene. We'll be right back.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
The early line is live on SportsGrid, and we begin in Denver. Would you look at that? Surprise, surprise. The Heat did it again. And honestly, it really does seem like nobody can believe it. You know when the Miami Heat went out there and ultimately got rid of the Milwaukee Bucks? I think a lot of people were surprised. But as that series was coming to a conclusion, were you really? When the Miami Heat got rid of the New York Knicks, well, that wasn't surprising. Come on now. Come on now, right? When they were up 3-0 on the Celtics, though, I felt like if I looked around, not that you thought they'd be up 3-0, but you knew they were being disrespected, right? It felt like people were once again believers in the Miami Heat, what they brought to the table with legitimate pedigree, great shooting, Jimmy Butler, Bam Adebayo, Eric Spoelstra, the whole team, the whole deal. And all it took for all of that to get washed away was one game in Denver. Heck, actually, they didn't even need to play the game in Denver. As the Nuggets were flirting with a minus 500 status on a series line before we even played basketball. They win the first game, it's minus 800 for Denver. Folks, the Nuggets went out on a run in the second quarter, and the tone was, I don't know why the Heat are still standing on the court. Just go home and rest up. It's been a nice season. I've seen people say, oh, if Miami doesn't play a perfect game, they have no chance to win. Whoops! Uh-oh! They did it again. The Miami Heat 111, the Denver Nuggets 108. The Heat once again have found themselves with home court advantage in the NBA Finals. That is where we are. The Heat have home court advantage in the finals, and people are like, I mean, is this team for real? I mean, do you think that this team? Yes, man. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, they can. Yes, Gabe Vincent can keep playing well. Yes, Max Strus and Duncan Robinson will hit threes. Yes, Bam Adebayo is capable of scoring 20 a night. That's what he averaged in the regular season. And Jimmy Butler has still not played well beyond a couple of possessions in the fourth quarter of game two. And we're here, Donnie, with an even series after two games in Denver. And it's still minus 270 on the Nuggets, and we'll get into that when it's time to get into that. But it's incredible that once again people are left stunned that the Miami Heat are right back here and evening up the NBA Finals.
Yeah, the computers, Kevin, as we like to say, are against the Miami Heat. But look, you know I get inside information from time to time. Now, Nielsen, I think his name is Roger, called me directly last night with the ratings. Said, you know what? Look what we have around 1 a.m. A 15-16 share when the game started here. Everybody's buying in. The Miami Heat can play. Kevin, the minute that the Denver Nuggets took the lead in the second quarter, I believe only the Denver households are watching at this point, because everybody, probably including yourself, checking out on NBA Finals game number two, which was amazing to me, because as I talked at the beginning of the show, the Heat culture, because you're right, there is a little bit of a jab at the Miami Heat going, no, it's not the players, it's the culture. As if you could run an NBA G League team out there, strap the Heat logo on it, have a pep talk from Pat Riley and Eric Spoelstra, and the Heat culture will lead you into the NBA playoffs and certainly a long run in the playoffs. We know that's not what the actual case is. But still, we are not believing in the Miami Heat. And maybe because, Kevin, we just look at the numbers before the game starts. That's a blowout, man. 8, 9, 10-point lines repeatedly there. We're almost conditioned. It's like Pavlov's dog here. Like, ding, 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 ding. The bell goes off and you see them. Like, yeah, my Heat stink. Look, they're getting 9 points in this game. What do you want them to do? Then they win and we go, wow, I can't believe that happened. Then the next game comes up and I believe, looking at the early indicators here, that the Denver Nuggets will be favored in Miami. Ding, 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 ding. Yeah, the Miami Heat can't win that game. They're not even favorites on their home court. And yet they're probably going to do that. I think we're just conditioned at this point, Kevin, that the Miami Heat, we're supposed to believe they're not supposed to even be in the playoffs, and we're still playing it out that way. And every single night, the odds maker is telling us the Miami Heat aren't supposed to be here. We're just conditioned to it at this point, it feels like.
You're saying we. Are you in the room setting these lines? It's not we.
Yeah.
It's not
we. It's me and you. You're in that we, too.
No. Yeah. No, but here's the thing. Not only am I very obviously not in that we, Donnie, 2 weeks ago, you weren't either. Forget the people. You, right here with me. What happened to you? You were team, I don't understand any of these lines that they book when it's the Heat and the Celtics. They now show up, it's the same lines when they play Denver, and you're like, I don't understand why the Heat rolled the ball. What happened to you? You've been with Miami the whole postseason since they eliminated the Bucks, who I think you did again just yesterday morning, bet to win the NBA championship this season.
Yeah, I mean, well, look, the numbers aren't making sense here. And I guess it's only what you saw last game, right? It's like, oh, the Nuggets were by far the better team, and this isn't going to end well. They finally met a team that's actually a true number one high seeded, because apparently the Bucks and the Boston Celtics weren't high-rated enough teams here for anybody to get convinced behind. But they're just defying logic at this point. That's all it is right now. And I'm telling you, but breaking down yesterday's game number two and watching the ebbs and the flows, you got the great start here. And I know you talked about Max Strus. I even said Friday, I'm not going anywhere near Max Strus. That guy misses the first two shots in the game number two in the first quarter, and it's a wrap, and the guy went nuts. And by frankly, he went nuts in the first quarter and then stunk up the rest of the final three quarters, but it didn't matter
because
you got that bump early. That's a really good – I mean, the way the Heat battled back all the way through, and we don't talk about this enough, Kevin. It wasn't wire to wire. Like, hey, man, the Heat played great in the first quarter, solid in the second, closed them out in the third, and rode into the fourth quarter. They were down 8 points entering into the fourth quarter on the road in a game they knew they had to win, and he can't go down 0-2. And they were sensational.
Listen, they were. Shout out to Max Strus for getting it done early.
Man.
That bounce back to me was expected. Now, I did not think that he would go and hit four threes in the first quarter and then make no threes the rest of the game. Okay? I won't say I did that, but he was a best bet on betting above the rim. It was fantastic to see. Because the thing is, when we go and look at game one, and it's like, hey, is this going to hold? Well, obviously not. Max Strus is way too good. But Donnie, also, one guy that you called for the bounce back was Duncan Robinson.
Yeah.
Who in the first 2 minutes of the fourth quarter said, hey, what if I tie this basketball game? And it was incredible. Duncan Robinson came out there and had 10 points, it was, in the first 2.5 minutes of the opening of the fourth quarter. He went out on that little 6-0 burst there, I think it was an 8-0 run by himself, and it was a two-point game 1 minute and 10 seconds into the fourth. So, again, where this works for Miami, I understand. It's like, hold on, there's no way they shoot 50% from three again. The Heat have now, they fell short, but the Heat are flirting with the record for most games shooting 50% or more from beyond the arc with at least 25 attempts from three. And if you look at that,
and your answer is, well, it'll not happen again, you're lying to yourself. That's what you're lying to yourself. I know you didn't expect it, and I'm not sat here trying to say that I told people 2 months ago the Heat were going to go out there and shoot 50% from three every game. But look at what is happening in front of your eyes. And yet, Donnie, people still think, I had a conversation with somebody I respect yesterday night who said they think Denver might go grab both games in Miami. What are we doing here? What are we doing?
That's exactly what we're doing, Kevin. Again, it's just the way our minds are trained right now to look. Denver's that big bad wolf that swept the Lakers. They're waiting. Wild. They blow out the Heat in game number one, and now we get to game number two, and all it took was, again, which I joke about, the minute the Denver Nuggets took the lead in the second quarter, I really thought, oh, man, come on, man. Is this really going to be four games, five at most at this point? And all I kept telling you late last week was, just give me a Miami Heat win on Sunday night, and we're going to have a lot of fun with this series. And I'm glad they did, because now with these series evened up, it goes back to Miami, and still no respect for the Miami Heat.
When that second quarter run was happening, Jokic was on the bench, which led to massive Twitter panic of, oh, my God, they lost the non-Jokic minutes. Yeah, well, they won the 42 Jokic minutes because he was a minus 11. We're going to focus in on the two-time MVP and a lot else with this series next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Back right here on Sports Grid. We got still a lot to get into with game number two, but I want to hear from Jimmy Butler, who has had himself an interesting start to these finals. He's not been, I think, what would usually categorize as playoff Jimmy, but here is playoff Jimmy talking a little bit about game number two.
You played on a lot of mentally tough teams over the course of your career. What is it about this specific team that makes them so resilient, especially in this run that you guys are on?
I just think nobody cares on our team. We're not worried about what anybody thinks. We're so focused in on what we do well and who we are as a group that at the end of the day, that's what we fall back on. Make or miss shots, we're going to be who we are because we're not worried about anybody else. It's how it's been all year long, and that's not going to change. So that's what I think it is. I think it's the I don't give a damn factor.
There it is, that I don't give a damn factor from the Miami Heat and Jimmy Butler making all the difference. And I do think that is kind of, to touch on that, that is where the culture stuff matters. That is where that, because it might come off, you know, cliche at times here. But what we know, if the Heat thought that Denver was significantly better than them, then they would be inclined to fold when the Nuggets were going on that incredible run that they were during the second quarter, right? That would be the result there. But the Heat don't believe that, and that is enough to actually go out there and make a difference. And you're seeing that not just with some of the role players that have stepped up, Donnie, but Bam Adebayo, second straight 20-plus point performance here, chipped in 9 rebounds and 4 assists. Bam Adebayo, I think inarguably, has been the MVP so far for the Miami Heat through two games. Jimmy Butler had 21 points, 9 assists here in this game. If you look at the finals MVP market, again, factoring in Miami still sits at plus 220, it's Jimmy Butler at plus 430, Bam Adebayo at plus 650. I do think that Bam has the ability, and I think it's been seen, to outplay Jimmy Butler and things still go well for the Miami Heat. I just struggle to believe that Jimmy Butler still doesn't have two 30-plus point performances in his back pocket as this finals and this series is going to continue.
Which is a good sign for the Miami Heat, you would think, right? If Jimmy Butler is going out here and dropping 38 points a game and they're struggling to win, that means that you're relying a little bit too much on Jimmy Butler. The rest of the team's not getting involved. And also, are you wasting big-time production nights out of Jimmy Butler? But having said that, if Bam Adebayo, Kevin, is going to give you 20 and 10s nightly in the NBA Finals, that's exactly what you would have signed up for if somebody would have told you that before the series had actually started. And also, can we give some credit to Jimmy Butler? He might be my favorite post-game press conference guy, not because he gets up there and says salacious things and wears funny outfits and, you know, has a couple nice quips here, but he actually is such a calming influence. Like, you would believe that in the locker room. Like, after game one, once again, when everybody's writing off the Miami Heat, Jimmy Butler just sits there and goes, look, we're going to get it together. We're going to play well. Like, just trust in the team. We're going to be fine. And even after a game two victory, heading back to Miami now, as home court advantage now switches over to Miami and the Heat, same tone. Same tone in his voice. Hey, look, it's business. Like, this is what we do. We're supposed to be in this environment. We believe in each other, and we're going to push forward, and we should be able to win this game, even when the odds makers say it's probably not going to be correct, because we'll get into the series pricing here in just a few moments. Mm-hmm. But Jimmy Butler, myself, like, you watch some things on TV, like the press secretary for, like, the White House, right? It's chaos. No matter what president it is, what secretary it is, just getting bombarded. Make Jimmy Butler the press secretary there, sitting up there. Hey, what's wrong with the country here? And Jimmy, hey, look, hey. We got this under control, man. Just believe in us and we'll be fine. I'm like, you know what? That's something I can believe in, because usually, Kevin, you see it one time, you're like, oh yeah, what else is he supposed to say? Jimmy's been this way throughout the entire playoff run, absolutely sitting back there saying, we're not in trouble. Yeah, we lost. There's no pressure on us. We're a good basketball team. We'll get this figured out. I love what Jimmy Butler is bringing to the table right now.
And that, it's hard not to. Jimmy Butler's approval rating's very high. People that don't like him. I don't even know if the people of Boston dislike him. Knicks fans don't, which is just embarrassing and not, like, grow up. But other than that, Timberwolves fans, maybe. Like, Sixers fans love him. That's my read
Sixers
on it.
Sixers fans shedding tears. Yeah. Yep, shedding tears.
I think the Sixers fans might hang a banner if the Heat pulled this off. Be like, listen, we should have still had him. And honestly, like, you know.
The split jersey banner? Sixers, Heat. Oh, yeah, it might happen. Yep.
I mean, listen, again, the Heat retired Michael Jordan's jersey, and they don't get slandered enough for it. So the Sixers retiring Jimmy Butler's jersey, I mean, listen, we can't rule it out, is how I'd say it. So Jimmy plus 430, Bam Adebayo plus 650, Nikola Jokic minus 260 to win Finals MVP, almost mirroring the Nuggets' odds to win the series at minus 270. Jokic finishes this game with 41 points, 11 rebounds, and 4 assists. And Jokic has now had 3 games of 40-plus points, and the Nuggets have lost all 3 games. In the post-game press conference, Eric Spoelstra was asked about the idea of turning Jokic into a scorer. He was very angry about that. Said that is a question born of the untrained eye. I then absolutely adored some of the replies saying Spoelstra was trying to cut the question off. That way Denver wouldn't realize what he was doing by making Jokic a score, which was 10 times better than anything that was kind of going on in the back and forth. Here's the deal, though, Donnie. I don't think it's not nothing. The idea that his 3 biggest scoring performances have all led to a loss is not nothing. And I think you can, you attribute that to the fact that when Jokic is able to find others, instead of them having to create their own shots, they're getting significantly easier looks. And also, it's math. It's 2 versus 3, right? Jokic is at times finding open shooters, and that way you're out there and you're able to match Miami's 3-point output. The Nuggets took 7 less threes than the Heat did. And I mean, obviously they went out there and made 6 less as well. The Heat's efficiency was tremendous, but because Jokic is far more aggressive in the paint, which makes all the sense in the world for a monster 7-footer with all of the size advantages that he has. Again, I understand Spoelstra pushing back. I love, again, Twitter saying that he's doing it to try and go hush, hush. But you cannot ignore the reality that Jokic is now 0-3 in 40-plus point performances this postseason.
Yes, and you're right. There is something to that where he said, okay, let him get his. We don't think everybody else can get involved with him, create their own shot. Because what did you see, Kevin, in game one, like so many times with the Denver Nuggets? The minute Jokic got the ball in his hands, he's making some wizard pass to a wide-open three-point shot or a wide-open layup here. He's that good. So now they're turning the tables. But I got to say this. This needs to happen here because I love Eric Spoelstra as a game-to-game guy. But Michael Malone, for me, gets so angry at the most common questions here, which I just somebody would have said, hey, by the way, we just were interviewing Eric Spoelstra, and he's basically saying that we're just going to turn Jokic into a scorer, and you can't handle it or make any adjustments here. Like, that's what I need because he would get all inflamed. If somebody asked him any question, like, well, what's the changes here? Did Eric Spoelstra make a move that said just make Jokic into the ultimate scorer and you guys can't, you know, come from behind or overtake that? It's hilarious the way this is going to play out because if he hears that from a little snippet, like, oh, you know what? You can't make adjustments on Jokic scoring 45 points a game. That would be tremendous theater to watch it play out. But I do think there is something to it, actually. Like, Eric Spoelstra, from game to game, making the change there. It's pretty clear. In game one, hey, look, don't let Jokic beat us. Well, my God, he's doing it all. Another triple-double. Let's try something different and say, hey, you know what? Let him get his and see if we can work out. They won the game. And you're right, as you pointed out. Every time Jokic climbs the ladder with his points, it doesn't work out so well for the Denver Nuggets.
And again, like, Spoelstra also, you know, maybe pushing back on the idea that basketball is as simple as 1 + 1 = 2. And I get all of that there. But the idea of, okay, no more double teams, right, is an adjustment that then can go out there and make sense. Can I just also, just to, on your Michael Malone point there, there was a parody tweet that said that Michael Malone at the press conference went, I feel like we only lost by three and all anybody wants to talk about is that Miami won. And I thought it was real at first. Like it was another one of me. Like I was gonna come on here and open with that quote. But it's just because that's, again, the tone of Michael Malone. I can only imagine how angry he is that the Heat are getting credit that they actually deserve playing against his team. The other quick point of this, DRS, then, and again, there'll be plenty of time to get in over to this over the next 2 days, and I know that you and Joe Ranieri are going to do a great job with it, but we finally saw Jamal Murray come back down to reality. Six consecutive games of 25-plus points. That now ends here with an 18-point performance. And I'm not going to say that Jamal Murray is not going to go out there and score under 20 every game. Certainly not. But similarly, he's not going to score 25 every game. He had two games in both the Minnesota series and the Phoenix series under 20-plus points. The reality is the Lakers ran up against the best series Jamal Murray will ever play in his NBA career. That's what happened. But that is not – Jamal Murray is not going to average 32.5 per game. He gets all the credit in the world for that, and Miami gets credit for slowing him down. But they did DRS finally for the first time since game number 5 in their series against the Phoenix Suns hold Jamal Murray to under 25 points. He finished with 18. That's a key for the Heat.
Yeah, you know, it's also interesting, too. Those elevated assist numbers keep coming in for Jamal Murray as well. Yeah. But also, we saw the talent for Jamal Murray really is off the charts. Some of the shots that he makes and the difficulty are fantastic. But as you said, a superstar player, when he gets hot, is hard to stop. A superstar player trying to find himself, that's going to get a little bit creating here over the next games 3 and 4 in Miami. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a good one.
No doubt about it. Coming up next, though, here on The Early Line, we head to the Diamond. What happened this weekend in Major League Baseball?
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Here on a Monday morning, getting over to Major League Baseball. And we'll start this off with the Mets and the Blue Jays here, where Toronto handles their business. They win 6-4. They got a big series against the Astros coming up that we will preview in hour number 2. But the story does feel like the Mets here, Donnie. 30-30, 500 once again. This is where baseball is very different. It's early in the season, but we have a big sample size now of this team being disappointing, right? 60 games is legitimate. And it's offensively that they have not been able to answer the bell. I know very often for you when you go through and look, and I know that might sound a little silly coming off of a 6-4 final, but we're talking full season kind of outlook here for the Mets. This has just not been the kind of season that they were hoping for.
No, it's certainly not. Let's just take a look at yesterday, Kevin, the starting nine out there for the Mets. 234, 244, 213, 231, 234, 250, 282, 188, and 237. And we're talking about, Kevin, you have a good sample size. Now, granted, some of those guys haven't played the full 60 days. I understand that. But what do we talk about, Kevin, coming into the Major League Baseball season? Whoa, banner year here for batters. Why? Because players can't be shifted on. That means what your tendencies would be. And if you're, let's say, a switch hitter like Francisco Lindor or whatever, any switch hitter that's going to bat from the left-hand side, hey, look, you can't stack everybody over on the right-hand side. That should be at least 15 points to 20 points over the season. Francisco Lindor is a $300 million contract player, Kevin. He's hitting 213. It almost doesn't even make some sense. And we always joke about, you know, Pete Alonso, 231, which actually feels like 331 compared to the rest of the lineup, because at least he's driving in runs with home runs here. But from a Mets perspective here, forget about the series where they just got swept for the Toronto Blue Jays. That's unacceptable. If we have a clean slate, right, Kevin, wipe it clean, we go back to April the 1st. I look at that lineup and go, yeah, that's a team I really want to participate in with team totals throughout the summer. This is a team I don't think I've even come close to taking just yet, because every day it looks like a bad lineup, and that shouldn't be the case.
And Francisco Lindor catches the eye once again, and you mentioned it. Look, it's you think back to Lindor's first season with the Mets. He wildly underperformed. You then go to last year. Batted 270, had 100 RBI season, 26 homers, and it's like, hey, this is the guy. And he got off to a start against Donnie that probably mirrored a lot of the guys on the team. But over the last 2 weeks, I mean, he's batting under .150. Over the last 15 days. You know, the last week of baseball, he's batting, he's got two hits in his last 22 at bats. It does still start with the stars. And again, you mentioned Pete Alonso, and I know it feels so unfair when you mention everybody around Pete, but Pete having this unbelievable power season while still batting .231 is very difficult. I'm not saying that Pete Alonso has to be Aaron Judge, but it's not 2004. It's not a situation, Donnie, where power hitters, you expect them to bat .230, right? He's not Adam Dunn, Pete Alonso. You expect more from him, and that's the thing. When your two best hitters are who's supposed to be in Lindor and Alonso are both fighting for their lives to be batting .230, that's a recipe for disaster.
It is, and take a look at Pete Alonso, who does have some pretty good power numbers here. Imagine if the Mets lineup was a completely machine around him, getting on base and loading it up, how many more RBI he could possibly have this season. Now, granted, we say it's early, right? Because technically it still is in a Major League Baseball season, but 60 games into it, are we just going to wait for the New York Mets to wake up here? And how long is that shift going to take? Now, we're not expecting, Kevin, 6 to 7 runs every single night. But the players that you're supposed to rely on here in that lineup, particularly, again, Lindor is going to catch a lot of it because of how much money he makes. That's supposed to be a guy, Kevin, hit like .315. And just like you have to pitch around him. And, ooh, you can't pitch around him because Pete Alonso's behind him. There's no issues right now. Because when you know it's going bad for a hitter, Kevin, you take a look yesterday. And actually, Lindor got a base hit. It was 1-for-4, which doesn't sound like much. But Kevin, he struck out 3 times. That's how you know he's not locked in. I mean, if you're striking out that many times and not necessarily a strikeout guy coming from Cleveland, that's the worry.
It absolutely is. To then get over to the other New York team with the Yankees and the Dodgers, because this is a big series here whenever you're going to see two teams like this meet up. And the first thing that just stood out to me when this game finished is that the Yankees have a better record than the Los Angeles Dodgers. And I guess it speaks to overreaction nature, and I'm an absolute, you know, part in that, because I was like, get this Yankees team away from me. I don't even care. I'm over it. I'm good. I'm great. Nope. We're good here. We're good here. I mean, all of a sudden, they're 36 and 25. There's three teams in all of baseball that have a better record. Now, unfortunately for the Yankees, they're all in the American League, and two of them are in their division. But it continues to speak to just how much time is left here in the season and how much better baseball this New York Yankees team is playing. Taking 2 out of the 3 from the Dodgers on the road is tremendous stuff.
Yeah, no Aaron Judge in the lineup, too, which is obviously your best hitter. And also, let's keep in mind, you take that old crystal ball out. They got a pretty good rookie on the mound there for the Los Angeles Dodgers with Miller. He goes six innings pitch, Kevin, one hit, no runs, no earned runs in that game. You say, wow, when there's a, like, you know what? We took one in L.A., it's okay. But no, you won that game 4-1. Those victories to me, Kevin, feel like double downs. Like you pulled out two victories in one when you can go up against a pitcher that's dominating in his home ballpark, not have your full strength lineup, and still win. And you are correct. What do we talk about the past 2 to 3 weeks? Man, hottest team in baseball. Look at that lineup waking up, the Los Angeles Dodgers. But here come the New York Yankees finally getting healthy now and getting those secondary pitching options to match up with how they should be pitching. This is a team that you're going to want to watch out for. And also, Kevin, as you said, doing it a little bit quietly now because of how tight that AL East race is and how far away and ahead that the Tampa Bay Rays have gotten. Everybody gets to forget about the Yankees. And in a big market, must feel nice for them once in a while. Like, hey, you know what? Nobody's really putting that pin cushion to us right now because of how well the Rays are playing. We'll be there in the end.
Yeah, and to then, though, talk about one of the teams that does sit above the Yanks would be the Texas Rangers. 30 runs in 3 games. Their offense has been phenomenal. I know, Don, that there's been a number of times where, whether it's team totals or RBIs, this group has, you know, looked worth your attention. They're coming off of a game where they just put 12 up against this Mariners team, and they're sitting right now at 38-20, the division leaders in the AL West.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive, too, because you're getting pitching from some guys that you didn't think were to say, okay, they might be average. Like Nathan Eovaldi has been absolutely tremendous. The bullpen has been solid, but this is a team every single night. Forget about betting with the Texas Rangers, Kevin, right? When you try to bet against them and say, ooh, I got a good price against the Rangers tonight. I'm a nice little dog. You look at the lineup, and at the end of like 5 innings, they have 5 or 6 runs. You say to yourself, why did I do this to myself here? Because this is one of those teams that's hitting on all cylinders, and every single day should be one of those teams that you open up the odds book and you say to yourself, all right, who are we looking at first? The Texas Rangers. Do they have an opponent that they can get after? Oh, look, they can. You're not expecting double-digit scoring every night. But, Kevin, it feels like they score double-digit runs every single night. They're really good.
Yeah, except for the fact that I did actually have their team total over at 3.5, the game that they were held to 2 in that series, which is why it is that hilarious that they averaged 10 runs per game in the series. Can I ask you something with Simeon quickly? 23-game hit streak. I feel like in baseball, when you flirt with history, the MVP stuff, then all you kind of get re-entered into that conversation, right? Like there are people who genuinely still believe Ohtani should have won AL MVP last year, but he was not going to overcome Judge making history. I'm not saying that Marcus Semien is going to break the hit streak. I really don't think anybody's ever going to break that record. But Semien right now sits at 30-1 to win AL MVP. How far would he have to get this streak, Donnie, to where you think a part of the conversation on a daily basis for Major League Baseball would be the Marcus Semien hit streak?
Even if he does get the hit streak, you say to yourself, it's one of those things that we don't ever think is going to be broken. So if a guy breaks it in one season and they have a good baseball team and wins the division, you are going to get a little bit of a bump. But you can still put a theory out there that says, well, what happens if he goes 1-for-5 every game and his batting average drops to 2? You see what I'm going on this one? It's not illustrious one where it says it's 150 RBIs or whether it be, 75 home runs, just putting something or batting, over 406. But if you do get that 56, that would be impressive. But also, you're right. He's a catalyst here, Kevin. The same way we just talked about the New York Mets, right? Hey, who's your 2 biggest guys in the lineup? Pete Alonso, Francisco Lindor, really struggling. Look at the top 2 guys in the lineup here, 303 and 349 in Seager and Semien. That's money well spent where you're getting, it's like every game you feel like you're behind the eight ball for another team when these guys come to the plate because they're always on or hitting home runs or doing damage right away. But you're right, Marcus Semien, it's going to be tough here because some of those power numbers have to be lifted. But my goodness, if he gets a 57-game hitting streak, that probably means, Kevin, he's batting like 330. I'm playing devil's advocate going, he goes 1-5 every night, which he's probably going 3-5 every night at that point.
But also to echo your point there, it one of the guys is batting 349. That's not the guy on the 23-game hit streak there, right? If Semien were to really have to make the push, it would have to be a batting title. You would imagine kind of.
Correct.
But also, again, 23 games isn't really close to the streak. Like, I think you got to get to the 30s. And then it would be like a daily Marcus Simeon hit streak watch thing. That's kind of how I, the last long one I remember was Jason Kipnis. And I don't know if I'm like skipping over a number of them, but that's the last lengthy hit streak that I remember. How about the Phillies? I can't even
break them up. Yeah, there you go. Do it. He got it. He got it.
Kyle Schwarber got LASIK.
I believe so.
Surgery, Donnie.
In the locker room after a game by one of the players on his team, apparently, here, changed it up. Because, look, I told you, before the weekend started here, I mean, this guy need eyes. Hits home runs. It's June, Kevin. Maybe something to it.
Man, I saw a thing that since 2021, he has hit 30 home runs in the month of June. And the next closest player has hit like 20. Like, so it's just Schwarber unload season here. Now that we're in June, are the Phillies vibes all of a sudden back? By the way, he's batting 172. Shout out Kyle Schwarber, man. I mean, 15 home runs, 172. I mean, my goodness.
Every single hit he's got this year apparently is a home run, which is pretty impressive. But even though you're taking away the Phillies' bats in this game, and they scored 11 runs, and they're bouncing back, and that's all fine and good. But the one thing the Phillies been waiting on, those secondary pitching options outside of Nola and Wheeler. Nola is actually struggling, but they're the two aces. Somebody's got to step up. Ranger Suarez, 7 innings pitch, 1 earned run yesterday. A couple back-to-back starts here where he's getting back into that 2022 fold. That bodes really well for the Phillies. Even though they scored 11 runs, I like the Suarez 7 innings pitch, 1 earned run even better.
DRS Cures, anything else over the weekend Major League Baseball wise catch your attention? From one thing that stood out to me was the disaster that was the Boston Red Sox defense, where they allowed a simple base hit to score an inside the park home run essentially there. Anything else catching your attention on the diamond?
The Cubs, with that 7-1 win yesterday, they're an interesting team because they're 26-32, and I think that lineup is just starting to come into play. And how about Marcus Stroman? 4 straight really solid starts here for the Cubbies. And keeping an eye on the Cubs lineup today, the matchup might be in their favor at the plate.
Interesting. All right. Well, and here's the thing. Then it does kind of open the runway there to bang up the fact that the San Diego Padres, I mean, they have to be the runaway favorite for most disappointing team in Major League Baseball right now. I mean, they're 27-32.
The National League's got 3 of them. Yeah.
With the Phillies and the Cardinals being the other two.
Actually, 4 then. Phillies, Mets, Cardinals, Padres. Come on now, National League. Way too much talent there.
I guess my only thing is, like, the Phillies were in a World Series. The Mets are disappointing, but at least they're 500. The Padres spent all that money. And it's like, hey, we're battling with the Rockies. That's ugly. That's ugly. We'll be right back.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Closing out the hour here on a Monday morning. A lot of good stuff coming in hour number 2. Full Major League Baseball preview. We've also got the Stanley Cup picking back up here with game number 2, as well as some NFL headlines. A little bit of breaking news, actually, this morning in the NFL involving the Buffalo Bills. So we will get to that in hour number 2. But some golf headlines here, Donnie. We're going to start it off on the ladies' tour, as Rose Zhang made some history and grabbed attention, and rightfully so, as she was about a week removed from winning an NCAA championship, then went out there, made her LGPA debut, and what do you know? I don't know if I got those letters right there, Don. I don't want to hear a word about it, pal. All right? PGA, LPGA, nailed it. But she made her debut, and she won. First woman to do that since 1951.
Now, look, we can equate things, Kevin. You know, I like to do this. Winning on the LPGA Tour as a basically rookie in your first event is tremendous, only to be held up next to, I believe, my first appearance on the Sports Grid Network went just as well and just as hyped here when I appeared for the first time. But having said that, I don't even know how it happens, Kevin, to be honest. How does somebody who just turns pro and wins a tournament right off the bat? That's ridiculous. It really is. It's the only thing I could equate it to be honest.
Sure. I made a decision there. Victor Hovland won the Don, what'd you think about Victor Hovland getting the job done this weekend?
I mean, do you want me to equate Victor Hovland's win to something else in my life? I could probably certainly do that as well. But having said, like, Victor Hovland is that guy, Kevin, that we look at in golf as he's the next big thing, which means we're just waiting on him to win a major championship. But again, if you want me to equate Victor Hovland's career to mine, it's probably a lot of similarities all the way through.
Many, listen, I mean, a lot of people actually were texting me saying, wait, is Donnie back golfing out there? I was like, no, that's Victor Hovland, man. That's what exactly. A lot of people were confusing the two. So that's, Donnie's debut, man. Donnie's debut. Hour number two, the early line, is coming on up.